So we were going to round off this. Oh, sorry, we were going to introduce this podcast. So we're going to pretend we're all fresh and just arrived, and Paul's not here. Just you and I, Matthew. Just pretend Paul's not here.
Hello.
Shut up.
Hello.
Is there anybody out there?
It'll be a delightful evening of discussion.
What shall we talk about, Rube?
Fucked if I know, Matthew.
Gosh.
Maybe it'd be good if someone turned up unexpectedly, wouldn't it?
That would be exciting.
Because then we'd have something to talk about. Maybe we should talk about... What was the first thing we talked about?
The size of your shoe.
Fuck off, you're not here.
Oh, sorry.
We should talk about... I can't remember anything we talked about. I don't think we actually did talk about anything.
We talked about it in the present tense because it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
Stop looking at Paul. He's not here yet.
Oh my god. I can't cope with it.
Fucking head in. Alright, just cut. We'll do that later.
It's a bloody sacred hill.
It's been going off.
I'm not known to be so busy for a while in Sawtelle. We have a bicycle shop. That's not happened for a while.
Yeah.
It's not really a bicycle shop, though. It's more of a bicycle display coffee shop.
Yeah. It's an odd thing.
You wouldn't want to turn up there on your rusty old bike and ask them to change the tyre before you, because that would make a terrible mess on their shiny floor.
Yeah, I can't. I looked in there as I walked past yesterday, and just looking at all that sort of lycra hanging up, it's not right.
No, they're like Doctor Who props. You feel like someone's going to stretch over your head and kill you.
Yeah. I just can't imagine. I don't like tight clothes, so I can't imagine wearing that.
This is why you don't like Star Trek, isn't it?
Yeah, that's probably where that comes from. It just seems terribly icky to me.
I actually prefer when it comes to those tight Star Trek uniforms. I think the Battlestar Galactica does it much better, because they have kind of slightly unhealthy looking middle aged people in slightly saggy looking.
Space 1999 was good for that as well.
Didn't I say that? Sorry.
No.
What did I say?
Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, I meant Space 1999.
Okay. Yep.
Aren't they the same thing?
No.
Well, I can't remember. I was only a kid when I watched that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't allowed anyway. I kept on having to turn it off when my mum was coming into the room and switch it back to BBC Two, where they had Harold Lloyd on. But I was actually watching Space 1999. Well, there we go. So we've uncovered your why you don't like Star Trek. Because of the lycra.
Yeah, I'd never thought of it. But yeah, now that I think of it, answers
that
a lot.
Brings me to that wonderful nugget of information I gleaned from Copenhagen Eyes about Lycra. The Lycra brand is owned by Kosh Industries.
Oh no.
And as you know, they're the ones who are backing the Tea Party movement.
Yes.
And they're climate change deniers. And so Copenhagen Eyes pointed out that obviously every time you put on a pair of Lycra shorts, the Koch brothers kill a polar bear. So when you see these cyclists thinking they're all the greenest, coolest people, if they're wearing Lycra, you know they're lying. So they have to be wearing baggy tweed or something. And then another insight, I've probably told you already, but I haven't told the internet, Cameron's, which I've been dying to write a blog post about this, where he pointed out to me that cycling is just the new golf.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because back when I was, in my 20s, all the yuppies were in the golf clubs, and they all paid lots of money to join the golf club, and paid and bought these. That'd be fun.
Might as well.
important.
Hello? Oh, hello, Paul. Oh, we're just recording a podcast at the moment.
Why do you ask?
Oh, okay. Right, yeah. I'll see you then. Okay, bye. We've got a surprise guest coming around.
Well, podcast night, we need a guest.
Yeah. So, Councillor Paul Templeton. Yes,
oh, he's embarrassed himself.
He's coming back for a final bow.
Well, we better get all the talking we can get done before he comes and takes over then.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so golf clubs. They all bought titanium golf clubs and fibre handles and all the latest equipment with their golf equipment. Back in the 80s, you know, just golf was the go. They all had their fancy, strange clothes they wore, you know, odd shoes and odd trousers. I mean, I could be talking about cycling here, you know. I need to write a blog post to try and explain that with illustrations. I think maybe some graphs.
Yeah, as you so rightly say, there's a difference between that kind of cycling and the kind of cycling that has a basket on the front handlebars.
Yeah, but even the baskety ones are a bit worrying because then you get the ones who weave the flowers into their baskets and they get a bit kind of and they have to wear flowery clothes or tweed jackets and then, you know, I'm fine with tweed jackets, but it's when they become a bit ostentatious, you start thinking, now you're just getting silly.
Yeah, so I was reading someone recently talking about cycling as an affectation. It's the sort of thing, you know, Alan Bennett does, making his way through Cambridge on a bicycle with a bow tie, presumably, and a tweed blazer.
Yeah, I think cycling is just transport, and people just need to get over it.
Yeah.
And Michael Foote is my hero, of course, because when I was a kid, I remember seeing Michael Foote, the Shadow Minister, cycling into the... He was on the cabinet. This was back when Labour was in power before Thatcher.
Okay.
So I was very, very young. But I just remember... I always remember, but the only thing I can ever remember from watching on telly when I was that young, on the news, seeing this white, long, white-haired bloke cycling to 10 Downing Street, and there's all these big Rolls Royces pulling up outside with all these, you know, Harold Macmillan, I don't know, Polly's getting out. And there's Michael Foote pedalling up on his old sit-up-and-beg thing with a crappy leather saddle, and trying to chain it up against 10 Downing Street, and the police were moving along, saying, you can't chain it up here, sir. I'm going in there for a meeting. And I thought that was splendid behaviour. And he was being ostentatious, I suppose. He was making a point, you know. He was saying, you know, I don't need to have a pissing contest to see who's got the biggest car. I'm just getting to work. Because all these bodies were coming from just around the corner anyway, you know. And they all knew the press was going to be there. So they were all making a point by coming along in their big fancy cars to show how powerful they were, because they're big, powerful politicians. So I think it's a pretty brave politician who turns up in a bicycle.
Speaking of which, I was in Brisbane on the weekend, and I noticed that some of the Boris bikes seem to be getting used. So Brisbane has their equivalent of the Boris bikes that London have.
Taking their helmets in?
Well, this is the thing. I wonder whether I've been duped, because when we were in Brisbane in February for Drupal Camp, Drupal Down Under, that's what it was called.
Yeah.
They had these, you know, nice bright shiny bikes.
Here he is.
Here he is. All sitting in rows.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Ruben.
Pull up a chair.
Is there a chair? What's on the menu tonight?
We're
drinking some extremely bad wine, actually.
Oh, good. It's made of sandpaper.
I'm not sure in what way that chair is broken. That chair's pretty good, actually. You'll just find yourself gradually sinking.
But I don't mind if I'm sinking.
I always have that gradual sinking feeling, so it's fairly normal.
I might actually feel like I'm rising.
To participate in the merriness.
Well, I have a glass of wine, I would.
You'll have to fetch a glass from the cupboard beside the oven on the left-hand side.
But how have your kitties been since you got back?
Very affectionate, because it's getting cold. So
about the clinging to you.
Yeah. They come up for, well, Jackie's been wanting regular cuddle breaks throughout the day.
So work goes downhill.
Yeah, it's, you'll be very insistent.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Paul, here you go.
The Sacred Hill. I'm carrying my new gadget.
What's that, trousers?
No, it's a...
it's a blackberry.
It's a Brit blackberry.
Is this the one you got from China in a pack of 14?
No, this is council. They said, we're going to get blackberries. We found a way of saving money. And I thought, fantastic. Mm-hmm. So they give us a BlackBerry and they say the way we're saving money is now you get your emails on the BlackBerry and we can take away your ADSL account, your your telephone line.
Excellent. Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad you're saving our money.
Well, to the ratepayer, yes.
Yeah.
To me, I've got to pay for my own ADSL account now.
Just like the rest of us. Now you want to get the NBN working.
As long as it comes straight to the house.
What were we talking about? Oh, just quickly, the Boris bikes in Brisbane.
Yeah.
So they like the Boris bikes in London, except instead of advertising Barclays Bank, they advertise Lipton iced tea, which must have worked, because I came home from wandering about town, came back to the motel room and found Alison had purchased a bottle of Lipton iced tea, which I've never known her to drink before in my entire life. And it's I think it's the effect of seeing racks and racks of bikes.
No, it's the effect of seeing somebody sweaty and red-faced and wheezing going past, going, oh, geez, they look thirsty. I feel like a Lipton iced tea. Yeah, it's a great idea.
But as I say, I can't say that I actually saw any of the bikes in use. I just saw that some of the stands were sort of two-thirds to half-empty. And I'm thinking maybe they've just removed some from the stands to make it look like they're being used.
They're probably
being
pinched.
Because, well...
Melbourne, they did this experiment.
Yeah.
The bikes are there for hire. But it's failed because you've got to have a helmet.
This is the problem they're having everywhere in Australia.
That's the absurdity of it. It's so tremendously convenient having a bike you can just pick up and then drop off at the next rack of bikes. But you have to just happen to be carrying a bicycle helmet, which I never find myself just happening to be carrying a bicycle helmet as I'm going about my business.
Unless
I've already got a bike.
Now we need to invent something. We can make a fortune out of this, a blow-up bicycle helmet.
It's been done. There's a collar. You get this collar.
Okay. You pull a ripcord.
It's like airbags in car, and it's got a motion sensor in it. And if you start to go to the handlebars of your bike, you go... So you wouldn't want to slam anyone on the back or anything, or have a romantic moment and throw her on the bed and get whacked in the head by this inflating helmet.
And suddenly you look like the Mekon from down there.
Where is your Mekon sticker?
It's here somewhere. I'm
saving it for a special
occasion. I've had to find something to stick it to.
Matthew was helping me out the other day with Drupal, and I was so impressed with his vast brain that I ordered a Mekon sticker for him.
I see the resemblance.
it just needed the beard.
I used to love Dan Dare when I was
a kid. The beard, yes. Yeah. The beard does it. So when are you going to write a module for emotive avatars?
Is it not been done already? I mean,
no. Yeah. This is the number one gripe that Matthew has with Identica.
What, you can't just...
Well you change your avatar and it changes it...
retrospectively on all your past
posts. Oh, yeah, that annoys me too. So, sorry, I'm just gold-guzzling all the vino here. Anyone else want to
another bottle in reserve?
There we go. Matthew will have to crack open a new one.
The bottle shop opened at midnight.
Yeah.
Good on you, counsellor. You made that happen, didn't you?
I came on the right night.
You did, didn't you? Timed it well.
Yeah. What were we talking about?
Mekon and his vast brain.
His vast brain. Speaking of vast brains.
The emotive avatars.
The trivia night.
Yes.
Rotary Club of Coffs Harbour Daybreak fundraising trivia night, chairpersoned by one Cameron Bragg, CD Bragg as the internet knows him, was a roaring success.
Oh, good. So they liked him.
Yes. He's received several favourable reports.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah, the problem they had was that because in previous years they've been raising money for a charity which shall remain nameless, and that charity did a lot of the work in promoting the event.
Mm-hmm.
This time around we didn't have that because we were because it was raising money for a few different things. And so we only had half as many people turn up, but when we say we, I mean my wife's Rotary Club probably made more than half the money. So
well, that's good.
In
so
a sense, they got a better.
We were
better
very generous. The crowd was very generous.
Yep.
Oh, good.
Egged on by Cameron's remarkable emceeing skills. I'm jolly impressed.
Yeah, it was good. He did a good job.
I didn't go.
No.
Slacker.
You're invited.
I was invited. I mean,
technically we won in every sense except
We didn't answer the same amount of questions as the people who won. But apart from that, we won.
Yeah.
Right. So you came second.
Fifth.
Or thereabouts.
I don't know how I'm going to rationalise this, but I'm sure you could explain it. Well, it's got quantum physics involved in there somewhere.
We were penalised points because we had a larger than the
larger
normal amount of members in the team.
So it's
so you get handicapped. But the thing is, one of them was Alison, who was running around all night organising, so she was not partaking in the brainstorming at all.
Okay, so one down, yes.
So we got penalised for one person who wasn't there. And halfway through the night, Tony and Rosie Wicked decided they couldn't take it anymore and left.
but they were pretty good. Rosie was very good on all the questions about the sort of Hollywood love affairs and stuff, and the celebrity gossip.
Yes.
Much to her own surprise, I think, but which was good.
Let's just do it. Let's meet this thing head on. You were in it to win it. It's either winning or you're losing. There's nothing in between. I'm sorry. Winning. You starting to get the concept now? Oops. Winning. Good luck. You're going to need it. I'll be over here. Like, winning. Wow. Winning.
Well, you're reading a list tonight. Does that mean that everything's got to be formalised?
No.
It just means we're so dopey we have to actually have prompts to remind us to say words sometimes.
And it's on my hand a vote card too. I'm glad you put it to good use. Look at the poll he's got. That was great success in election.
Well, the thing is, I didn't miss a person, truly. During the last, what is it, state election? Was it state?
State
election. We were to vote one Paul Templeton and two Rodney Deegans, or vice versa, both former podcast participants and all-round excellent fellows. And so Ruben and I were both round at the local school doing different shifts and pulling sort of double duty, handing out how to vote leaflets for the Greens and Paul Templeton independent.
I was handing out votes for anyone who asked. I even at one stage, I almost handed out vote cards for Deborah Lyons. Is that right? No, Fred Nile.
I honestly think the person handing out the how to vote cards should get paid.
Well, that'd be good.
And they should just hand out one sheet. Or better still, nobody hands out how to vote cards and it's pinned to the back of the polling booth.
That would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it? It's far too sensible.
You have 28 booths times how many booths that they have. It would be under 100 pieces of paper.
Yeah.
But I think the election keeps people employed.
I quite enjoyed the social aspect. I got to chat to people from in different contexts, you know, because I'm standing outside there with what should be my arch nemesis.
Yes.
And yet I was having a lovely chat with them all, except for the crazy guy.
From the Pauline Hanson.
Pauline Hanson group, yeah, oh my God, he was pregnant. it was a beer gap, but it was a quite extensive one. And he was
I should have crazy. I rode those that wave. I should have, you know, got involved there. I'm sure I would have picked up a few more votes.
I think you did very respectably for a candidate who behaved very respectably.
Have another glass of wine, Matthew.
Yes. I can't.
Well, it was successful in the fact that now the Electoral Commission is badgering me because I didn't actually fill out a form, which is, you know, E.795.B4, something like that.
You dodgy bastard.
I.e., I didn't provide them with my bank account details so they could actually pay me. So apparently they're going to give me some money. I don't know how much. I printed the form out yesterday, but I just can't be bothered filling it out.
Well, you have more luck than I am right now.
Yeah, I've developed a morbid fear of forms. I used to love forms when I was a kid. Because it was...
This is a pretty blue one.
This is why you're a Drupal developer now.
It was like a... You know, as a kid, it's like most of the forms you get are intelligence tests of one kind or another, and you get congratulated.
It usually starts off with your name. Yes.
And you get congratulated and patted on the head for filling it out correctly.
Strange child, Matthew.
And you know, sad as it is to say, that's about as much approval as I ever got as a child. So I really liked filling in forms, but that wears off after a while, and when it becomes your job, it starts to become something you loathe, to the point where I'm scared of going to the letterbox in the morning and finding window face envelopes because might have to fill out a form.
I do understand that fear with relation to the how to vote card. I submitted my how to vote card, which, you know, that's part of the transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I got a phone call from the Electoral Commission saying it's incorrect. And I said, what do you mean?
It's my how to vote card.
And what they said was, number one, was I spelt the word Labour wrong. No, that's the correct version that you're holding.
Well, no, the Labour Party spells Labour wrong.
That's right.
Because they...
They came from the common class.
It's a quirk of history that the Australian Labour Party spells Labour without the U in deference to the American... Labour movement some silly reason like that.
Well, that was the first mistake I made, and the second mistake I made was I put down the word the Nationals. Apparently it's called Nationals. And where I put down Greens, the Greens.
Couldn't they figure that out for themselves?
Well, apparently I have to, whatever's written on the ballot paper that is drawn is what you have to put on your how to vote card. Now, to make it worse, up here it's actually Country Labour. But if you actually look at the how to vote card, it says Labour. And the reason being is the Labour candidate team up here submitted the wrong information.
Okay.
So they actually had to go under the election as Labour, which they were very upset because they wanted to distance themselves from the hoo-ha with the failed Labour government.
So have either of you two read Franz Kafka?
No.
You'd read Franz Kafka.
No, I'm really culturally illiterate.
No, Franz Kafka is not culture. It's just some stories, you know. But he's got. I'll have to dig some out for you. There's a particular one, The Castle, which just describes what you're talking about. It's this uncontrolled bureaucracy, which drives a person insane. You know, there's some guy and he's just. Disappearing up the arse of some red tape castle.
I've watched
slowly insane.
I've watched Terry Gilliam's Brazil about 100 times.
Yeah, well,
so
that's almost as good as Franz Kafka. Fantastic stuff. You really should read it if you ever get the chance.
But anyway, it's all over and nothing's changed.
I'm glad you see you're finally learning about politics, Paul. It's taken you a while. Yeah, whoever you vote for. The same people get in,
and even if you're the one that's been voted for, it still doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to edit that out of the podcast because, you know, reality.
It's not gonna look too good at the next
election. The moment you say that.
No, it's not that. It's the fact that when the community finds out the truth, you know, they'll go into a despair, and then they'll get into a deep depression.
Everyone knows that already. It's just you pollies don't realise that. You see, the rest of us all know it's all a load of bullshit.
I'm enlightened now. Thanks for telling me that.
That's all right. No problem.
I don't know. It's fun in a way, but it's also depressing doing the how to vote cards. Do they have those in the UK? Because they don't. At least not yet have a preferential voting system.
It's not particularly complicated in the UK. It's him or her. them or us, or yeah. I don't know. It's
but what does it say to, you know, about our society if we need how to vote cards? People should know how to vote by now.
I haven't voted in England for about 20 years. So
you would need a how to vote card.
I would.
Yeah. But no, I mean, if you were to just look at what was on the news, you wouldn't know anything about what decisions were being made or what government was going to pursue what policy. There's just sound bites. So I actually think the Greens did fairly well this year by putting on the back of their how to vote cards, you know, bullet points of why you should vote for the Greens. And I always thought that there were rules preventing this, because I've never seen anybody doing this before.
No rules.
Because there are loads of people who turn up saying, you know, I don't know what I'm doing here. Where do I go? What do? I don't really care about any of this. And they're the people who just watch television and think none of this is anything that should concern them. So, you know, that last minute, here's what I stand for.
Couldn't you just print on the back of your how to vote card that if you vote this particular party, then you get 20% off your next subscription to Foxtel?
The thing is, you can do things like that as long as you can fulfil it. So as long as it's troops, you're pretty much fine. But you can't go and bag another political party if it's baseless. But if it's factual, yes, you can actually put on the back of your how to vote card, you know, that if you vote these people in, this is what you're going to end up with. That's well within the rules of
how to vote cards. If you're actually a councillor voting today, don't vote for these people because they'll get rid of your ADSL connection and you have a BlackBerry telephone.
If it's truthful, yes, you can say that. And in this case, it's eventuated.
Bugger.
What is on that list?
Oh, various things. Various things.
Do you know what I've been up to the last week?
What have you been up to in the last week, Paul?
You've got
to
tell us, aren't you?
Yes, I'm going to tell you. Bitcoins.
That actually is on my list.
Is it?
Oh, there you go. Time to talk about
so
it.
So you've actually researched it.
Because we had a you know night about a month ago, wasn't it? When
I won 1 million bitcoins.
When
well, if you can multiply that by $7. That's what they're floated at the moment.
It's something you want to get into and out of very quickly, I reckon.
Well, that's what I'm doing. I can go into greater depth.
So we have our regular night at Sawtell Hotel, which is the talk of the town. You know,
the
social event.
And scrambled eggs. It's a raging torrent of conversation.
So at the last night, Paul was describing this Bitcoin thing, which none of us at that stage had heard about. And we were all thinking...
I didn't believe him.
We were all thinking Paul's clearly misread something. Or he's gone off the deep end and he's talking absolute gibberish.
Which I must admit I do from time to time.
But lo and behold, a week later, I start seeing stories pop up on the internet about Bitcoin, this fantastic thing, and that the EFF and the FSF are accepting donations using this virtual currency, which surprises and sort of fascinates me, but not to the extent that I've actually read anything about the technology behind it, because it involves encryption and all that boring stuff.
Yes, well, I haven't gone into the great depths of it. I've just gone into the potential of leverage, as they say.
Did you read that link I sent to you or posted on Microblog?
No, I haven't yet.
No, there was an interesting article written by, I can't remember who, some bloke, about why he didn't want to buy into Bitcoin. He was against it. And that kind of put a damper on my enthusiasm straight away.
Well, I
think the basic argument is everyone's raving about Bitcoin because it's being backed, instead of being backed by gold, which is, you know, supposedly what the dollar used to be backed by, it's backed by mats.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a capitalist article I also read. The guy was saying, but the currencies are no longer backed by gold.
They're not.
Yeah. So, and it's very cheap to create new currency, whereas a Bitcoin is actually quite expensive to create.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Alison. She's not going to say anything because Alison doesn't speak in the internet world.
The reason I'm here is because I actually came for the
some light banter with Alison.
Stuff. Yes, I'll get that later on. But do continue.
There's Bitcoin, maths. Yes, it's backed by mathematics instead of gold. And it's very expensive to create the Bitcoin. And so I think the problem they're saying is when there's a run, you know, everyone wants to buy their Bitcoins, they're going to shoot up in value, and there's a limit on how many you can create. And I don't know, there seems to be a few problems with it.
There are a few technical problems with it, but the thing is, it's like any currency, you know, at the moment, they're talking about Bitcoins as in one Bitcoin, and the algorithms that they're running will generate, or the blocks that they're working on at the moment, when they first started 12 months ago, they're very simple blocks to generate, you know, the algorithms.
And they have to make them more and more complex to keep up with the computing power, don't they?
That's right. So as you go along, the blocks become harder and harder to generate. So 12 months ago, those who got involved in it were generating Bitcoins every couple of days. I actually bumped into a local guy who ran it for a month, 12 months ago, and had 800 Bitcoins and forgot all about it. And I was talking to him about it, and he went and looked to see how many he had. He thought he had about 16 and realised that he has 800. And at the moment, they're trading around about $7 US, which is $5,600 of Bitcoins sitting there.
That'll pay his electric bill for running his computer for the last few months, won't it?
No, he ran it for a month, 12 months ago. But back 12 months ago, a standard CPU had the capacity to mine or go through all the blocks and generate the actual Bitcoins. Now it's becoming harder and harder. So you need more computational power. And that's the thing. So you need more power.
That's what I'm reading, isn't it?
More expensive hardware.
Now the case has become that it's almost, you don't make money.
Well, it's bordering, but
you literally do make money.
Yes, you literally do make money, but
the current,
because it's harder, the value of the product. Now, to give you an example, 2 weeks ago when I looked at Bitcoins, they were trading around about $1 US, and when you actually generate it, you usually find a block of 50, you know, with all the algorithms. And of course, being exponential, it is getting harder and harder to generate the coins. But within 2 weeks, it shot up from $1 to $7. And then suddenly, now it's viable again to actually mine the Bitcoins. So I've gone out and I've purchased special hardware to test the theory. And last Thursday I started. It took me 2 days to get the computer to run.
GPUs or graphics?
I'm using GPUs. I'm using the Radeon 6990 card. And the computer is running around about half its potential capacity. I've got to get a second card now. But last Thursday I started, and today I traded out some of the Bitcoins. I've now got $50 US sitting in an account. And the next day or two I'll trade more. So it's about $130 US worth of Bitcoins I've generated out of thin air, basically, in less than a week. So. All I'm doing is, as soon as I've generated these coins, I flog them. Because I only want to see the cash. I'm not going to hang on to these Bitcoins because of speculative value in the future. So we've sat down and we've worked out bits and pieces. So if we can find $260,000, we can buy 100 machines, and by the end of 12 months, we'll have over $1 million worth of money based on today's value, and it's increasing on a daily value because it's becoming harder and harder to generate. So therefore, in theory, spend $260,000 and generate over $1 million in cash.
So what's to stop Google just running up on all their, you know, on one of their little Google farms?
Well, Google could actually stop operating its search engine for a day or two and probably make $1 billion. But then again, they'd probably make $2 or $3 billion by running Google. So,
but they won't
do what you know.
They'll suddenly dump all these. It's like if the American Treasury suddenly printed up double the amount of banknotes.
Well, Google's got the resources that they could actually buy Bitcoins today, hang on to it for a week, and actually trade it out at a higher price. So.
who's to say they aren't doing that?
They probably are. They're the ones who are probably buying all the bitcoins, because I'm selling them, somebody's buying them, because I'm just seeing US dollars at the other end.
Well, it's a good time to be selling them, I expect, because I think they're the latest craze. I saw on Boingboing today they had the Bitcoin merit badge you can buy, but you only buy it with bitcoins.
How many bitcoins does it cost?
I think it costs a bitcoin. I'm not quite sure.
That's $7.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got
cool. Look, I don't care. You know, if this machine is generating income, I don't care. By the way, you've got to picture this system. Because of the radon card is... Or radion? I don't know how you pronounce it. It's the ATI card. It's so flaming big, I can't find a case to house it. So it's actually sitting in my shed. On a piece of cardboard.
Yeah.
In pieces.
That's good, it keeps it cool.
There was... I was just trying to find the link. I couldn't find it. There's a guy with a video showing his setup, and he's got four Radeon GPUs. Same as you say, it doesn't fit in the case. He's just got the motherboard sitting on a table with these four GPUs there with a desk fan blowing on it to keep it cool.
Well, I'm actually thinking about getting a desk fan, because you can't touch the card. It's that hot, it will burn you. So it's running at its full potential.
But well, it's winter, you should move it in the house to keep it warm.
Well, I actually said to Verity that I should actually bring it in the house, because it's burning about 1500 watts. So
if we replace heating in all the houses
with computers,
with GPUs, with computers,
they would actually be generating money whilst you're actually heating. It'd
be a bit like the solar, solar scheme. You know, instead of getting 60 cents,
it's more. This is environmental. I can see where you're going with this.
Yeah, it's you definitely go on the green with this kind of thing.
Burn coal to power your GPU
/processor.
That's right, and actually earn a quid on the way.
God, what the hell do we? What are we using these oil heaters for, and these radiators and coal heating? We should all be running gigantic server farms in our houses to keep warm and to make money with our processing power.
You're onto something. I'm going to tell my wife when I
And
get
we
home.
Should also have a big.
I'm going to say Reuben
winch under our house to lift it up. Sorry, that's another theory of mine. Have I told you that theory?
No.
The
winch under your house.
You've not heard about the winch under the house theory. I'm sure I've told you. I must have not been. Must have been very drunk. There's a fantastic theory I've got, where you use some kind of method when there's excess power around. For instance, if you've got too much sun.
Oh, you're using gravity as storing the weight of the house.
Yeah. So wind or whatever.
I've thought about this years ago.
And it basically winds your house up a big stick. So your house is lifted off the ground, and when it's up off the ground,
big storm.
Big storm, you'd be sitting in your house, you go out the front door, give
you'd
the chicken
be
some
50
food.
50 metres off the ground.
Go back inside, put the kettle on, come out with a cup of tea to sit on the deck, and the deck's gone. I'm 50 feet in the air because there's a storm,
But the potential kinetic energy stored in the house by
exactly.
being raised.
The weight of the house as it goes down.
You're onto something here.
But I had an even better idea. You see, if there's a storm coming, you make the wind power from the storm lift up your empty water tank, which then gets filled with water from your roof.
Ah.
Nice high house, presumably. Yeah. So it gets lifted up to the roof and fills up the water whilst it's getting lifted up. So by the time it gets lifted to the very top, it's actually got more kinetic energy than it's used. So it's actually created energy out of nothing. In fact, you've collected the wind energy, which has lifted it up, and you've collected the rain energy that's fallen on your roof.
So if you're touring around Australia and suddenly arrive in a town and see all the water tanks raised 50 or 60 feet in the air,
that's a town that's about to make money. They're about to crank on their GPU heating systems as soon as their houses start sinking, and Bitcoin's going to pop out everywhere. See that this could become something quite obsessive.
Well, I'm not doing anything.
But you would I wouldn't
be able to not have I wouldn't be able to have a little GPU device running in my garage creating a great amount of heat without checking every 20 minutes just to make sure it's still making me money or whatever it's supposed to be doing. making me, you know,
millions of dollars.
Yes, I get more entertainment out of BitTorrent by checking transmission.
I wouldn't care about the money.
To see how
the number's changing.
I get a lot more entertainment seeing how my downloads are going in transmission than actually watching the videos or listening to the music that I end up downloading.
It's slightly perverse, really, isn't it? Mm. Yeah, because I'm the same. It's just, I'll download things and then I'll set them all up. My family will sit down. My children, my wife, you know, they'll all sit down to watch, you know, Doctor Who or something. And I think I get the most satisfaction out of the fact that I've achieved a good fatherly, you know.
You're the hunter. You've gone out.
I've gone out. I've hunted. I've gathered. No, I've hunted. I've hunted. I've hunted. Slain the wild beast, and I've brought home an episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah. I know that feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very satisfying. And that's what Bitcoins are obviously doing for Paul and his little tribe there. He's got grass. Look, that's obviously this is how you make money. You make money by creating an application that creates graphs.
Google Analytics. People will trade their website users' privacy in exchange for graphs.
I give my liver.
With meaningless statistics.
Oh my God, I've had 6,000 web bots visit my website today. Steal my bandwidth.
So today I got... Here we go. My reward was 2.5 bitcoins, which was about $1,670. It's daft. It really is.
Before the whole Bitcoin phenomenon crashes, you might actually be able to afford to pay for those wines this evening. And possibly two more.
Yes, this watch is.
We'll invite you. We'll invite you back.
Sorry, Paul. I'm a bit negative about all this Bitcoin stuff. I think it's all a bit of a hoopla.
I don't know. I was surprised to find...
You can laugh at me in 6 months' time.
when I'm a billionaire.
When you're living in Mansion City.
I would be just totally sceptical and say, you know, it's tulips.
It is the Dutch tulip, yes.
But the fact that the FSF is accepting...
You've never heard of the Dutch... what's it called?
What the fuck are you talking about?
The tulip bubble.
Mm.
The tulip bubble.
That was about 1600s
or something.
Thereabouts. I'll look it up on Wikipedia, but we have our
use your mouth instead and tell
me. Our no research policy.
You don't know about the tulip
bubble? Fine arts degree.
I've never heard of the tulip
bubble. Fine arts degree, you see. He never did economics.
Right.
Mm. So this is famous.
Suddenly, ask any Dutch person, they'll be able to tell you.
at one point, tulips became tremendously fashionable, and so they were very, very expensive. So everybody invested in
Bitcoin.
Tulips.
Bitcoins.
Sorry. Yes.
Tulips, yes. Mm-hmm. Tulips, yes.
Mm-hmm. With the result that the market was flooded with tulips.
Bitcoins.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And therefore, tulips
Bitcoins.
Were worthless.
Oh my God, I'd hate that to happen.
Actually, you're going to have to Wikipedia this because
could you create your own tulips?
Oh, you could.
You could.
You just grow them.
But of course, as the more exotic and the harder it was to, you know, for the actual type of tulip, the more value it had. Mm-hmm. And of course, they started trading with tulips. Well, the Dutch still have their markets in relation to
flowers. Didn't they just give out 10 million tulips to Canada or something, and Canada suddenly became... the tulip capital of North America.
So I heard.
Here we go.
Matthew is now breaching our no research policy and looking
up tulip mania.
What era was it?
Period in the Dutch Golden Age. At the peak of tulip mania in February 1637, some single tulip bulbs sold for more than 10 times the annual income of a skilled craftsman. Is generally considered the first recorded speculative bubble, although some researchers have noted that the Kipper und Wipperzeit episode in 1619-22, I remember that episode, that was a good episode,
A Europe-wide chain of debasement of the metal content of coins to fund warfare featured mania-like similarities to a bubble. The term tulip mania is now often used metaphorically to refer to any large economic bubble when asset prices deviate from intrinsic values.
Okay, so all right, we're on the same page now.
The Bitcoin bubble. So the question is, do you sit back and do nothing, or do you sort of like say, well, as long as I get the cash, who cares? I'm cashing every Bitcoin I can.
No.
See, I'm not.
You're driving it.
I'm not speculating.
You're one of the people driving the whole speculation.
Well, I'm doing about 12% of the work in the
you're in the mania
that I'm working with.
You've got the mania.
And I want to do about 24%.
But you see, the ones who made the money, the guy you're just mentioning, all these people who casually made Bitcoins when it first came out, kind of going, what's the point in that? And then they just sort of reinstalled the operating system.
In 10 years from now, we'll be sitting here going, you know, I had to go to the bank and actually pay them 45
Matthew, you
Bitcoins.
Can't publish this until after it's all crashed and we're going to laugh our asses off at this crazy man.
Don't worry, the time it'll take me to edit this.
Yes. We'll be into the new mania, which will be the just the PSP lolcat image.
But here's
exchange.
The irony. All of this Bitcoin stuff is free and open source. So there is nothing stopping us from creating the banana coin.
Well, the thing is that there's nothing...
That's right.
There's nothing stopping us creating real dollars.
No.
I was reading something a while ago saying that...
There is, actually.
Some
Ruben.
Well, no.
It's stopping us.
Do you have a mint? Can you...
Go, Matthew. Just ignore you.
The two bums on the... On the street, as in the American
two bums on a podcast,
as in the American sense of the word bums, hobos.
Yes, I visualize
persons
it.
Of no fixed abode can exchange $1 million checks, and that's a perfectly legitimate financial transaction. So they've essentially created money out of nothing. Or they can say, for instance, I have this asset, I don't know, a Mars bar wrapper, and I value it at $1 million. You know, I have a check for $1 million. Will you give me two checks for $1 million, and I'll sign this piece of paper that says you own this asset valued at $1 million, or you know, whatever. And this goes on all the time. It's called superannuation.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's called value. Currency is just the medium for exchange. So you can create it out of nothing. And then you put value on it.
There are lots of problems with Bitcoin that I've heard raised in the last few days. Some of them are technical, some of them are economic. If you go back to any sort of classical economists, they will say that money is not a thing to be regarded as a good to be exchanged.
No.
This is where Adam Smith and the people that are hailed as the founders of classical economics deviate from the neoclassical economics of, you know, the post-Thatcher Reagan age, where anything goes. You can mint your own money, you can say you have assets worth $70 squillion, and nobody will question a thing until it all comes tumbling down. So, I mean, you can say you have Bitcoins, you can say I have Facebook. That's,
well, everything's a currency, isn't it?
Yeah, that's 3 squillion eyeballs, and eventually one day we'll find some way of making money out of this thing. So my company is valued at some ridiculous amount of money, even though it's not really generating any kind of income at all.
Here's the difference. The average person talks in the terms of money. Wealthy people talk about wealth. And wealth is... It's something that's not necessarily tangible, but it's things that can actually generate or you can leverage from. And when we talk about, you know, like Bitcoins, etc., you've got to look at how can you leverage from this medium, because it's nothing more than a medium.
Sorry, why do you want to leverage? Because you want to be wealthy. You want to be wealthy.
Well, the thing is that's what wealth creation is all about. It's about leverage. It's not about Australian dollars or American dollars.
I understand
dollars.
That.
Yeah. So Bitcoin, we talk about it, and when you actually sort of like think, well, what can we use it for? It is a medium that we can actually move vast amounts of money. Because at the moment, if you went through customs and had more than 10,000 Australian dollars, you'd be pulled to one side and you'd be questioned why you're taking 15,000 Australian dollars out of the country, blah, 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 blah. Whereas if you were to actually use something like Bitcoins, it's a USB stick with a hash key that you could take out $1 million across the boundary. But at the same time, why would you take it on a USB stick? This is the value of Bitcoin.
So the value of Bitcoin is that you can do money laundering.
Exactly. So if you're a billionaire and you want to hide, you know, $100 million of money, say, you know, you don't want to pay tax on it, for instance, and you want to get it to Switzerland,
so you,
what's the quickest and easy way of doing it?
So you're essentially creating money to give
no,
to...
No, it's a medium to move money.
You're creating a medium to provide to dictators who want to, you know, who've made a shitload of money from, you know...
Ultimately, that's one way of looking at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Currency is based on the evil side. Ultimately.
Yeah, it's the root of all evil. I mean,
it's the truth of it. So it's like everything that's new. If I can, and that's why the bitcoins have actually been bought up at $7 American at the moment. It's because people who want to move.
Mahatma Gandhi is not Mahatma Gandhi. The other guy, Gaddafi.
Gaddafi, or better still,
easy to get confused.
What's the guy, the president of Zimbabwe? What's his name?
Both had crazy dress sense.
But the thing is, if you want to move money to Switzerland, for instance, Bitcoin, why not?
Okay, so what we're talking about, the real value of Bitcoin is money laundering.
That's good to look at. It's the medium of exchange.
There's no value in Bitcoin for me because I have no money to launder.
Well, actually, that's the thing. That's the thing that...
It's a medium and it's not regulated at this particular point.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it is also a medium that cannot be regulated. And that's why
they'll give them the shits.
And that's why it's valuable.
Yeah.
That's not why it's valuable. That's why it's going to fail.
No, it won't fail.
That's why they're going to suddenly...
How can you regulate something that you cannot put your finger on? It's 100% peer-to-peer. There is no centralization whatsoever.
The tiny degree to which this whole phenomenon interests me is for the same reason that other alternative currency systems have interested me in the past, is that there's a lot of productive activity that goes on that does not touch the money economy. And it's valuable stuff that people do and can do or could do, but they basically have to make money. But if you could produce something valuable for somebody who in turn could produce something else valuable, and you can start another medium of exchange that's unregulated, you can start to tap into some of the value of the work that people are doing or could be doing, and you know, just do something productive with
this
it.
This is something you're talking about, which has been they've attempted to try and address that with the LETS scheme.
Local exchange trading systems, yeah.
But you know why that fails? It's because why do you want to learn how to play the guitar?
Because I want to exchange my plumbing skills to fix their taps, which I really hate doing that job,
But the thing is, the typical barter system only works if there is debt. Bitcoin, on the other hand, isn't a debt system. It's a physical... Well, it's not physical, but you know what I mean? You actually have... electronic coins to actually trade.
There's your problem. We need electricity. Who's going to pay your electric bills? I mean,
oh my God.
How are you going to pay your electric
Especially
bills?
Especially since they've sold off the
in Bitcoins,
the electricity.
If they cut your electric off, you can't pay.
I'm putting a water well in out the back. My water well will generate me my...
That and the fact that his house will be 100 feet in the air and falling very just gradually.
You know, that's right. You can tell the wealth of a person by how high their house is.
Look at that guy. He's 150 stories in the air.
My God, he's mega wealthy. He can let it rip anytime he likes and he can be pounding in the money.
Oh my God, he's falling at 5.5 meters per second. He's really gigawatts.
He's raking it in. The coins are popping out.
My mother-in-law and father-in-law kept on flooding my life with books on how to succeed. So I've read the books of all the successful.
What they're trying to say to you there is that you're a failure. That's why they give you those books.
Well, they could be given those books for those reasons. But the thing is, I have learned what the world's all about. And ultimately, it's stupid. Computer now sitting at home has only got 2.5 teraflops thereabouts.
So it's not the fastest thing.
No. but it just gives you an indication of
so the speed. So can you model nuclear explosions on your computer?
Sure, we can. If they did it in the 60s, I'm sure I can do it on my...
Yeah, because the Mac can, can't it? The fast Apple Mac.
Well, if you go to WikiLeaks, you can actually download a copy of the plans that they use for building the first A-bomb.
Oh, that's been on the internet for years, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember. Well, what I'm saying is,
that was the first thing that was ever published on the internet, wasn't it? That nerve gas. And how to make your own drugs.
What if a computer...
Oh, and a naked lady.
If a computer could make drugs. You know, that was all in ASCII, you know. Jeez.
Yeah, what's wrong with ASCII? They look just as good in ASCII.
This is how geeky all this is with the, you know, going back.
Oh, no, it's not geeky, back, Paul. No, no, don't.
Going back to the
don't
ASCII
denigrate
days.
Denigrate yourself. No, it's going
perfectly
normal.
Going back to the ASCII days, I remember I was running a terminal emulation and it had the ability to have colour characters. So I was sitting there and I got an ASCII rose and I spent hours changing it so that the actual rose, or the top part of the rose, was actually red for my first girlfriend.
Wow. Did you get a shag out of that? I mean,
no, I failed.
She actually wanted to shag you, but you were too busy changing it to red.
I failed on both accounts.
Oh, well. Better luck next time.
How do I love thee? Let me count the ways in hexadecimal.
Hang on, I've got to put another escape. Binary, I've got to put a few more escape sequences in here. It's purple. Oh,
wow, the time was we wasted.
Well, I suppose, I don't know which is worse, playing mud, you know, the old text-based mud, or...
I tell you what's worse, watching the Brady Bunch.
Washing?
Watching the Brady Bunch. And anything is better than watching... The way I spent my childhood watching television... You can play Free Civ for a year.
I think that's better than watching too easy. I mean, if you lived in England, you would have spent your childhood just plodding through the rain in squeaking Wellington boots.
What, picking coal to power the...
Going to school in the dark and coming home in the dark.
Weren't you going on jolly rambles and having lashings of ginger beer and finding smugglers' caves and things like that?
We were, actually, funnily enough, yes.
Of course you were.
Well, I lived in Cornwall. That's the land of the smugglers. No,
here we go.
Don't get me started. It's the centre of the world, obviously. In fact, actually, Sherry bought me some clotted cream, and I opened up the packet. I was very disappointed, of course, because it wasn't Rhonda's clotted cream, which is the Cornish clotted cream. But Australians don't know how to do clotted cream. They don't understand what clotted cream is.
I must admit, I don't.
It says clotted cream on the label, but you open it up and it's just double cream. It's slightly thick double cream.
Right.
You know, it's just thick, gloopy cream. But that's not what clotted cream is.
Is there a fermenting process there?
No. Like, that's disgusting. What are you talking about? Yeah, put pickled onions in. No, all it is they milk the cows. They get the milk. They pour the bucket of milk into a great big enamel bowl. They put it over a stove and heat it up really, really slowly. And when it reaches just below boiling point, they just turn it off. Well, I can't remember.
So all the fat goes to the top.
All the fat rises to the top, and then they let it cool off. And it slowly cools off. And when it reaches
room, so it's just like a lump of
when
hard
cream. And when it's room temperature, they get a nice big flat spoon with holes in, and they just scoop it off into a big bucket. When I say they, I'm talking about my mum, because we had a cow when I was a kid. We were very lucky, and she used to.
A cow in Cornwall?
Yeah, it was a Guernsey.
You cool. You must have been a very wealthy family.
We were extremely wealthy. Yeah, we had gold just everywhere. I was always tripping over it. It was terrible. Anyway, so yeah, we that's how you make clotted cream, and it's nice and lumpy and clotted. That's why it's called clotted cream. But in Australia, they have to make it. They have to sort of homogenise everything and make it
clean. So do you really like that thick cream, that lumpy?
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Well, we get it on the top of our milk.
What, here in Coffs?
Yeah.
Well, scoop it off and save it for me.
I'll start doing that. Because I usually get the spoon in there and carve it out of the top and then throw it down the sink.
What kind of milk do you buy?
Unhomogenised organic milk.
Lucky $10
a pint. I don't know why they call it unhomogenised. Because that's implying that they've homogenised it and somehow
they've dehomogenised it.
Maybe they have.
And instead of saying non-homogenised, which would be the real
they
term,
they reassembled the atoms that they had disintegrated.
That's it. They've got
it's a very
got,
complex
they've got
process.
Star Trek replicator there, haven't they?
Don't get me started. Why do they homogenise the milk? Why?
I don't know, to make sure that the fat doesn't go to the top, which is what you're talking about.
But that's like an added benefit. We used to fight to be the first person to get the milk in the morning.
There was nothing worse than, years ago, you'd pull the gold tab. Remember the gold tab on the milk bottles?
Yeah.
And then you'd go to pour it and nothing comes out because there's this bloody big cork
on the
top.
That's not worse. That's we used to love that. We used to scrape it out and dollop it onto our cereal. It was lovely.
It's quite obviously we come from a different part of the world.
It's a cultural difference. Do you suck the insides of the prawns' heads?
Okay. What's the next topic on that list you've got?
Have I been scrumping or shagging or riding my tractor? Being nothing nicer than coming home to a pint of Tregeagle's clotted cream. Make it good and warm, mind.
Just tune in now, folks, if you feel like a nap. A bit like Pirates of the Caribbean 4, which I went to see on Sunday with the kids, and I had a delightful doze. And in fact, I'm going to have to cut this soliloquy off short because we need to go to the bottle shop
and get some more wine so we can talk about Pirates of the Caribbean.
No, I think that's depressing. We're not going to talk about Pirates of the Caribbean when we get back. We're going to talk about something completely different. It'll be drunken and disorderly, and we'll probably delete it.
And if we don't come back, listeners,
please say that again, just as you said it just then.
Fantastic. I can't say it again, but Matthew will edit it out and play it back for everyone right
amplify
now.
Amplify it. Yeah.
Don't amplify it.
So, this is listeners. We shall be speaking to the listeners.
Just think what would have happened if I actually got elected in the state government.
One glass of wine. Jesus Christ, mate.
Personally, my diction is improving.
Andrew Fraser comes out swinging. You should see what I do. Talking about listeners, before you go somewhere, Matthew, you were saying that how many downloads you've been getting.
This is the fault of Andy C on Identica.
They're not listening to that, so it's okay.
No. Yes, I'm not a football fan.
So. Soccer, you mean? The head say soccer.
Then so, again, I suppose it is a better sport than some of the, you know,
what, football, bullhead stuff. What, football or soccer?
Real football. Not the football that we talk about here.
You mean rugby?
Yes.
Yeah, I get confused about all that stuff.
I know.
You know, when I was a kid in England, my school, everyone, that was the first question I got asked when I started at my new school was, what team do I support? I was like, what do you mean? I didn't understand. I didn't follow football at all. I liked Massey Ferguson's though. I was in a rural school. We liked tractors there. Well, I like tractors. But
I like tractors too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Didn't like David Brown's so much. A bit rusty.
No, the Ferguson's are nice, but I also used to like the forwards.
But after a while, I learned that I just had to pick a team and say it. So I used to say Liverpool FC, which I think it's a football club.
And in our house, we always supported United. And the only reason.
The airline?
No, United. That's all I know.
Oh, okay.
But the reason being is because I used to play for United in Campbelltown. And United was actually the Uniting Church. Did you know about me?
I briefly supported Aston Villa. Only
it
because
sounds like
I was
a block of housing machines.
It sounds like James Bond's car, actually. It's very, very, very flash.
But only because I was watching the Match of the Day highlights. And I didn't realise that they were the highlights. And I thought, what are people talking about, this being a slow-moving game? It's very pacey.
Extremely exciting. Yeah, now then you watch the actual thing, and there's some puffy little football player clutches his leg and goes, oh, you kicked me in the knee!
So I've just looked in my server logs, and in the time that my server has not been actually crashed...
Well, it's about 20% of the time.
We've had 634 downloads of the various episodes that we've so far put up.
Wow.
Which is strange. I don't know. Maybe spam bots are now downloading old files to analyze
listening to them. And they'll insert. We'll suddenly find ourselves saying, anyway, I think you should all rush out and get some Viagra now.
Yeah.
It's great stuff.
What'd you call it?
Viagra.
I call it Viagra.
Ah, Viagra. We should have a long conversation about this. It's not been inserted by a spam bot. I have... No, okay. Let's not go there.
So you're saying Andy C? I do follow Andy C.
Andy C is the guy who looks like a zombie caked in flour, isn't it?
A drug crazed zombie caked in flour.
Yes.
Right.
AKA Alan Partridge.
He talks a lot, doesn't he? He's got a bit of a talking disorder.
Last I looked, I feel awkward talking about people
in front of their
backs.
He's on the other side of the world. He'll never get us.
but he posts on average about 40. He does 40 dents a day or thereabouts.
Mind you, he did take our server out, didn't he? So
now I'm uploading all these to archive.org now, so that archive.org can take the hit. Next time somebody says that we do a good.
I like archive.org. It makes me feel relaxed and peaceful. It's a bit like a sort of cemetery or something. You sort of go there to rest.
It is like a cemetery because you can't find anything.
No.
You can wander about for ages and ages and ages and not find anything.
Oh, it's Karl Marx's grave. Yeah. Oh. My God, I never knew he was buried here.
So, archive.org does a wonderful thing. Brewster Kahle, the guy who founded it, said... You should not have to pay money to give stuff away, and that's a wonderful philosophy, and I totally support what archive.org does, but their user interface is crap. So as just a place to put stuff, archive.org functions very well, but as a way to find stuff that's in archive.org, it doesn't function too well.
Yeah.
But
well, I found the Chicago DrupalCon stuff there recently, and that was through the Chicago DrupalCon website pointing me to archive.org, and suddenly finding this massive gold mine of fantastic Drupal information, which I've been just started watching over the weekend, and my God, that's good stuff.
Next month the Pentagon Papers are going to be officially declassified.
All of them?
All of them. So the system works. We don't need WikiLeaks after all. You just have to wait 40 years and then you find out what's going on.
So we'll know who killed JFK.
We will finally be able to legitimately argue for the impeachment of Lyndon Johnson.
This is exactly what Matthew's going to do. He's going to sit there the day that it's released, That's what he's going to do. He's going to be looking through all the paperwork.
Yeah. So you know, we don't need leakers. It all comes out in the end. Democracy functions perfectly well.
Well, that's good to know. Yeah.
Absent friends.
How far do we have to go back?
Whispering Ted Lowe has kicked the bucket.
But so has Sarah. What's her name? Sarah.
I was getting on to that. Mm. But first off, Whispering Ted Lowe, the commentator on Pot Black.
There was nothing better than watching Pot Black.
Sorry, it must be an Australian thing.
It's actually British, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is British. We got it on Australian TV. We used to lean on the edge of our chairs.
Well,
you know?
Our English listeners might know what you're talking about, but I don't know what you're talking about.
It's all about pool.
Snooker.
Oh, my God. What, that thing they introduced just to try and make colour television popular?
Everybody knew about Pot Black.
His most famous quote being from Wikipedia, "And for those of you who are watching in black and white, the pink is next to the green."
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, I do remember.
So there you go. Yeah, okay. We're showing our age now.
Yeah. Well, you are. Yes. I'm far too young. Despite the fact I admit my age
how come,
2 seconds ago.
Matthew, how come you remember Pot Black and I do? Was there nothing else on TV that we actually thought Pot Black...
You know, I think this is a fundamental difference between Australian people and English people. I think Australian people, when the weather's beautiful outside and the kids are inside watching television, they go, "Huh, the kids are quiet." Whereas in England, when the weather's nice outside, which is very rare, and they're inside watching TV, the parents say, "Get outside, the weather's lovely, go and enjoy the weather." But unfortunately, I mean, you'd think, obviously, that means we watch television for 364 days of the year because it's raining the rest of the time. But in actual fact, what it means is the parents go, "Let's kick the kids out at every opportunity because they're driving me crazy just by their existence because we can't have sex on the washing machine or what do they want to do?" So we'd get kicked out even when it was raining, you know, and it would be pouring with rain. They'd say, you know, "Get outside because it's a lovely day out there. Get some fresh air." And you go, "But it's raining. Go and put your anorak on. Go on, fuck off." And so you'd go outside and, you know, hang around in the rain. Ostensibly, you'd be playing. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to be doing. But we'd go and walk into the bus shelter and stand there for a bit. So we never got to see all this stuff. But you guys, oh no, you've got all this. I think your parents were hanging around having barbecues in the backyard or something. Is that what were they doing?
How come
you guys got to watch telly and we were always kicked out? There's a cultural difference there. You Australians seem to watch more TV.
My father used to say he couldn't bear to walk into a room where the TV was switched off. It was like having a corpse in the corner of the room.
Yeah, I've heard that since I've been here before. But in England, it was the opposite. You know, if you came in, the TV's on, it's like, "Turn that infernal machine off!" It's like, "What machine?"
No, that's
my family member.
In our household, it's shh. Pot Black is on.
But anyway,
Ted Lowe,
absent friends, Sarah Jane.
Yes, and Sarah what Jane. Happened to Canine?
Canine. Sarah Jane was my one true love.
What was her real name?
Elizabeth Sladen.
There you go.
I was really shocked by the news.
Oh, I was quite choked up actually because when I was a kid, I think, you know, she was someone I watched on telly and I quite liked her. I must admit, I fancied her a bit. She was rather nice.
You're not the Lone Ranger there.
Oh, we're a sad bunch of kids.
Yes. She was one of the longest sidekicks.
Not really, but she... Oh,
but she, to me, she was...
She was better than that one. She actually had that leather...
Oh, shut up. She spanned Doctor Who for me. When I talk about the Doctor Who that I liked, It's
you're John, showing
John,
your age.
It's the end of John Pertwee.
Yes.
And the beginning of Tom Baker.
Yes.
There is a man with taste.
And then it all finished, you know. And you think, well, hang on, what's the combining factor here? It's Elizabeth Sladen.
And what happened to the Brigadier?
There's a couple.
I don't give a fuck.
That's exactly right.
Nicholas Courtney, yeah, who played the Brigadier, passed away in February. Sadly.
Sorry, Nicholas, I didn't mean to knock you.
There's another name. There's
yeah,
number two.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was really. I was dead chuffed when they did. What was the David Tennant story that brought Sarah Jane back for an episode?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
School reunion. I'll say that again so I can edit out the poor diction. School reunion.
What school reunion?
School reunion.
And school reunion.
Because, yeah, she was really only in it for three and a half years.
Is that all?
Yeah. But, as you say, it really did span Doctor Who's golden age.
You know, it's kind of sad that I'm 42 and 3 years of my life were fairly important to me.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's not sad, really. It's quite good.
You've got to stop saying 42 because it brings you back to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Which brings me back to Doctor Who.
That's it. Now we're really showing our geekness.
No, you were doing it with Bitcoins.
Yes.
You're ugly. Positively hideous. That's why you need Tregeagle's Clotted Cream. Tregeagle's Clotted Cream is scientifically formulated with scientific sciencey stuff to help fight the 37 signs of repulsiveness. The pro-vital astral Pomeranians in Tregeagle's Clotted Cream visibly reduce the amount of money in your bank account. By the time you get used to the smell, you'll see the results. You can't afford to miss the only chance you have to stop hating yourself. Tregeagle's Clotted Cream. Because you're worth it. Well, not really, but you can buy some anyhow.
Also, if you go to Tom Baker's website...
He's got a website.
He's got a website.
Fabulous website.
I've never seen
it.
You have to look at it. Because that's my era, Tom Baker.
Yeah.
Yeah, go check out his website. It's great.
It is fantastic because he has a forum with an Ask Tom.
You can ask him a question.
And he'll answer it.
In fact, we should ask him a question. We'll ask him a question right now. See, my question for him would be, you know, dirty. I want to know, did he, you know, him and Elizabeth get it on? But that's probably not a question I could ask really on the worldwide internet, because they might lambast me for that one. Because it's a bit, you know, she's...
Well, he actually married one of his other companions.
Well, yeah, I got the impression that he was a bit of a James Bond of the BBC there. He was out, you know, having a great time.
The impression one gets from reading his autobiography...
Which you've read.
Which I've read and which might be sitting on my shelf somewhere.
Can I borrow that one?
Yeah, if it's there, if I can find it.
I'll keep on borrowing books from Matthew.
I just can't look up his cats and read them whilst...
Yeah, I keep finding I have less and less books.
I'm not going to give them back. I sell them on eBay.
Instantly, if our listeners would like to go and check out the Paul Templeton eBay web shop.
You can buy with Bitcoins.
Yes, you can buy Tom Baker's autobiography, which is a fantastic read. He's a genuinely charming fellow. He did have the most extraordinary, weird upbringing, which sort of led to him taking up monastic orders at one stage. He was a monk.
Like Rasputin.
Which he actually played.
Figures.
And that's how he got the role of the Doctor.
That is so poetic. That seems to fit.
He played Rasputin in a BBC production of Nicholas and Alexandra in the early 70s.
Thank you to Matthew, walking Wikipedia.
Yeah, which was what
got the Doctor Who producers at the time thinking he might be a good Doctor. And in the 80s, I actually saw a repeat of that production of Nicholas and Alexandra. He was actually mesmerising and pretty bloody creepy because you couldn't kill him.
you saw, and you had a copy of it?
I don't have a copy of it. But
you're not a very good pirate.
Well, I think that was maybe before I had VHS, so I've got an excuse.
You are showing your age.
The days of
transmission.
The days.
Oh
of,
my God!
You just had to use your head to record it. You could take notes.
I can't remember the point I was making.
You were making the point about what a great Rasputin Doctor Who is.
But
actually, which the current Doctor Who, Matt Smith, I think he's very similar to Tom Baker in many ways.
And who was before
Matt? I actually think he's very similar to Peter Davison, who you hate.
Yeah, but no, he's not a veterinary surgeon. He doesn't put his hands up
cow's bottoms.
Cow's bums, yeah. No, not at all.
We've done this before in our
Doctor Who podcast. Let's stop. Everyone's tuning out
now. I'm going to the toilet.
Okay.
Please, take the microphone.
Keep on talking.
But
Paul's the toilet. Let's talk about Paul.
But anyway, it was tragic losing Sarah Jane. Really fantastic talent. And I was really... I was upset when she had her own spin-off series, but it was a kids' show, because I think she could have done a really good, not adult series, but a
young adult,
just a television show.
Yeah.
Not aimed at any particular audience.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Just being Sarah Jane, being a reporter and going off and investigating things.
In some ways, it was slightly. I think it was slightly sexist because. I don't know if sexist is the right word, but they're saying, well, you're a woman, so, and you're a middle-aged woman, so you're a mother. So a mother, what's a mother do? A mother looks after kids, so we'll get you doing a kids' show, you know?
I don't know if it was that so much as that they'd already spun off Torchwood, which was supposed to be the Doctor Who for grown-ups.
But it was a good show. Oh, Sarah Jane was good for kids, I mean, it was...
Yeah, I only saw an episode or two of the Sarah Jane.
Emerus likes it. My 9-year-old thought it was a pretty good show.
But anyway, check out Tom Baker's website because he wrote a lovely little sort of tribute to Elizabeth Sladen, and it was very, very nice.
Don't forget me.
Oh, Sarah, don't you forget me.
My doctor.
Bye.
You know, travel does broaden the mind.
Yes. Till we meet again, Sarah.
Also amongst our absent friends, Osama bin Laden.
He was a lovely man. He babysat my children one night.
He was quite a character.
He was a funny one, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, oh, look.
He was had a ribald sense of humour.
The mad comic beard.
Do you remember that time he blew up those towers?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, he's a funny man.
Yeah. But
apparently, when he died, he slipped in a banana skin.
Is it just me, or is it barbaric that... Everybody should be saying, well, hey, we shot this guy.
Oh, Matthew, how could you?
We could have apprehended him, put him on trial, put him in jail or something, but no, we got our revenge, just like in a Bruce Willis movie.
But wait, there's more. We dumped him overboard.
Yeah. never mind the conspiracy theories about that. But I just... Am I alone in the world in thinking there's something vaguely, well, not even vaguely, very specifically seedy about sending in a kill team to mete out justice?
Aren't you nervous?
Or not so much justice,
but
revenge.
Check behind you, Matthew, through the darkened window.
Yeah.
Are there any black helicopters out there?
There's a Black Hawk. And there's a sniper up there. Hello!
They're waiting for us to say the wrong words. Yeah, it is distinctly seedy, and it's very worrying. And what's worrying is it's not just mainstream. This is President Obama.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
Osama. No, I get them confused. But President Obama supported, like he's announcing that he's got sent in a kill squad, and I found that really fucking bizarre that he was. I thought maybe you might say, oh, there was an undercover ops team and they accidentally killed him. They were supposed to apprehend him. You know,
yeah.
I don't know what he was supposed to say, but what he said was very extreme. I thought it was the announcement of an extremist. It sounded to me like, you know, the sort of thing that Idi Amin might have said in the 70s. You know, it was, we've just sent in a kill squad to kill someone, and
so
because they upset us.
So where is the body?
And sure, he didn't. Oh, shut up, Paul.
But I mean, if you look at how things were conducted in the past, which were not necessarily very nice, but I mean, Adolf Hitler killed himself for a reason. Because he knew he wasn't going to be shot on sight. He would be apprehended and humiliated, you know, made a mockery of. And it was better, as far as Hitler was concerned, I imagine, to die than to be apprehended and put in jail or suffer whatever sort of long drawn out legal proceedings would have gone on had he been captured alive. And I don't understand why, if you have the ability, which they surely did,
and captured him, put him in a cell with a gun.
No. Well,
there you go. Yourself. Get to work.
Gone through the necessary proceedings, which, for that matter, should be brought against Henry Kissinger and various other people.
There lies your problem. If they're going to be fair,
that's the thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find it immensely.
Anyway, moving along. We've done the intro. Done the show. Better wrap it up now.
We're done.
Oh, thank God. I'm pissed.
You know, we said we weren't going to get drunk next time.
Yeah.
On account of our slurring and our, you know, general...
And the time it takes to retrieve the usable bits.
And we have had a few shows actually disappear into the editing suite and never come out.
Well, only one.
Well, we kind of forgot we were doing a show, didn't we? We kind of got a bit drunk and had a nice chat and then kind of carried on chatting until it was just... leather.
Mm. It worked well with the two we did with Rodney and the two we did with Paul, which were actually just two recording sessions, because we had the aim of drawing information out of these people.
Yeah, we got loads of good information out of Paul. We really embarrassed him there, I think. It was quite good.
But
and Rodney's been avoiding me ever since that podcast. So. No offence, Rodney.
But
lovely bloke, but it was pretty funny.
Well, a couple of episodes before that, we were just sort of trying to produce a podcast, and it's hard to work out what it is that we're trying to do, apart from amuse ourselves.
Well, that's really mainly what we're trying to do. Surely that's what Monty Python were trying to do. They were just amusing themselves. But I guess the difference then was when they hit the record button on the tape recorder. It's a physical medium that's actually recording, whereas here you hit record and it's just a hard drive.
Yeah.
And I think that's the interesting difference is the physical thing. You know, you're recording and it's just bits and bytes. It's very easy for me to say, just wipe that bit out, just cut this bit out, change that bit.
It does impose a discipline. It's like when the Beatles first started recording, a guy who was sort of a major historian of the Beatles, who
his name's Matthew.
His name's Mark Lewison.
And he noted that in the early Beatles recording sessions, because he got access to all the master tapes from EMI, it was like John Lennon would see the red recording light come on in the studio and he'd say, "Oh, red light is on, let's go." And it was like that for the first few years. And after that, they had so much money that the pressure was off.
Because the red light wasn't counting down the money.
Yeah, or it was still counting down the money, but the money didn't meant matter. Less.
Yeah, yeah. And now we're at the stage where the money means nothing because it doesn't cost a thing to record.
You can.
And I could fart into the microphone for the whole evening.
Yeah, please don't.
And I could put it on the internet and no one would download. Well, actually, no, I'd probably get 600 downloads, actually.
Yeah,
And be wonderfully impressed with myself and skied about it endlessly on Identica.
Yeah.
Listen to me farting. Anyway, but I don't, so thank God for that. So what's that lead you to? I mean, to me, that makes me think that we need more discipline. I mean, podcasts aren't about discipline. Podcasts are about sitting there and having a chat and going on for hours and 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 hours and
hours and hours. I think it's like doing Speaker's Corner at the Domain or at Hyde Park Corner in London.
There's always been some sucker who will listen to you.
No, you...
That's you, dear listener.
You need to come prepared to talk about a particular thing, but you also need to come prepared to screw up the thing you've prepared and throw it over your shoulder and just...
Wing it.
But you can't turn up and expect to wing it and produce magic.
Well, that's our problem.
That's the thing, yeah. So...
Because we don't prepare, by the rule. And a lot of people don't, but I think a lot of people do.
A lot of people put a great deal of effort into pretending that they don't prepare, but I think they actually do. And returning to one of my comedy touchstones, Peter Cook, people always used to say the genius just sort of flowed out of him.
Hmm.
I don't think it was entirely improvised. I think he had loads and loads of stuff that he thought about very carefully. And the same thing if you go and see Billy Connolly.
Mm.
It looks like he's just sort of rambling on for 3 hours, but no, he's got...
Well, like...
He's got 6 hours worth of material, and on any one night, he'll pick and choose which selection from it
if you go and watch him again in another location. I mean, Bill Bailey. Evan and I went and saw Bill Bailey in Brisbane. And it was the end of a concert tour, and he'd obviously done the same thing every night, you know, for 6 months. He was bored out of his brains, poor guy. I actually felt sorry for him. Bill Bailey was down there in the Brisbane Convention Centre going, "Hello! Yeah, is it New Zealand or Australia? Oh, fuck, I can't remember." Yeah, you could always see him trying to remember where the hell he was and what the hell he was saying. And I'd heard half of the stuff already, the material... on the internet previously. I mean, because the television used to be the big, you know, suck up of all the culture. You know, anyone would tell one joke and it's all over the television before you know it. The internet's that times a million. You know, so poor old Bill, but Bill Bailey didn't stand a chance because my teenage son had downloaded every single Bill Bailey joke in the entire universe. So he can't possibly think up new jokes just for one night in Brisbane, you know, so it was kind of sad, you know, but I don't know how he could have avoided it. But at the same time, it showed me how much he's prepared, you know, because he's telling his jokes and he was telling them and he was very good at telling them and got lots of laughs from the audience. But from my son and I, we both sort of had seen them all and we were, you know, maybe because we were, you know, I'm a bit of an Uber geek and I've downloaded them all and he's watched them all and he's told them to me, and he's been, you know, Evan, he's told me the jokes 27 times each, driven me insane with them, so I had to sit there and hear them again. Oh, Jesus. So, sorry, Bill.
But, yeah, that's a painful thing, and unless you're extremely prolific, yeah, you're going to suffer that. And that's the thing with Louis C.K., is that...
He's fucking hilarious, but I couldn't watch it again.
But yeah, I mean, he burns up material by you know, making sitcoms out of it, and you can't reuse it. That, I mean, Stephen Wright is a hilarious stand-up comedian. He put out an album in the 80s called I Have a Pony, and didn't put out another comedy album until a couple of years ago, because once you've put out the album, you've burnt that material. You can't use it again.
Yeah, exactly.
But as you say, the thing is, if you perform something in public, somebody's got their iPhone trained on you and is recording it and is uploading it somewhere.
So essentially, a comedy routine has now become conversation. You might think you're a witty fucker, but I'm sorry, I've heard that already. I saw your video, that some fan video. If you're that funny, it'll just get shared instantly. I won't talk to anyone from now on, just in case I've heard it already.
That's the awful thing with Identica. If I think of something I think is funny, I go and Google it, because I'm worried someone else has thought of it before me.
This is why I don't comment. You know, in Drupal.org, I'm reading all the comments and I'm thinking, oh, that's right, and this is how it should be. I think of a good response. Sometimes I'll even type it up, and I don't send it because I'm too chicken. And then I refresh the page, and someone else has typed it up. The fuckers, you know, oh, bloody, I was thinking of that, you know. And people get there before you do, and that's how it works, you know. There's another 10 people like me who are too chicken to actually send the comment, and then there's one person who just kind of goes bleh and says it, you know, and you're like, oh well, I'm gutless.
Do they fix it though?
Well, none of us fix it. There's some geek somewhere who gets all guilty and fixes it for us. There he is, Matthew, hello.
Somebody else's problem is always more interesting than your own problems.
That's right, it's true enough. Yeah, well,
okay, we're done.
Time for bed.
You are crazy. You are crazy.
one is a demanding sport. It demands a lot from me, and I demand a lot from my engine. Let's face it, what else can I ask for? All my fans are middle-aged men. Anyway, if you want to get the most out of your engine, you should use what I use. Tregeagle's Clotted Cream.